Welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. Our host, Oscar Endermo, will together with guests share proven, tested strategies for improving your life and business. At the end of each episode, you will learn how you can use technology to implement those strategies into your daily life. We want to help you bridge the gap from inspiration to implementation.
Welcome to another episode of the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. A friend of mine reached out and said, I have someone in my family that I really think you should interview. She has a really interesting life story. And I trust this guy, so I reached out to Paul, and she has an amazing life story. From working as a producer and an actor in Hollywood to, yes, she's done a lot of things in her life that she's going to share about. When I started this podcast, it was the inspiration from meeting a friend that came to visit in Dubai. A friend recommended to meet a friend and that was visiting in Dubai. And we went for a long walk in Dubai on the beach. And so it was the first time I met the guy, and we went for a long walk on the beach. And it was such a lovely way of meeting someone because, yeah, the conversation was really flowing and it was just really, really nice. So after that a long, nice walk on the beach, I decided to do my next podcast as Walking and Talking with Smart People. That's what I called this podcast in the beginning. So I did maybe 10 episodes like this, where I was walking with a guest. But I had a lot of challenges. And for example, if you listen to the first interview I did with Igor, when we went walking on the south side of Stockholm, the interview is nice. We had a really nice conversation. Everything was flowing. But we had to spend a lot of time cutting that episode because there were so many planes flying over us making noise, and there were so many interruptions. We had to stop recording and so on, so it became a bit of a problem. And it was the same thing in Dubai when I was trying to do Walking and Talking in Dubai on the beach in Dubai. It was simply too many helicopters flying over us, so yeah, that it became a little bit of a problem. So I stopped doing that and instead just recorded like sitting down. And also over the pandemic, many of the episodes have been over Zoom. But now, since I'm back in Stockholm, I found a place I was thinking that was good for walking and talking, which is like a forest close to where I live. So with Pa, I decided to try again with walking and talking. And we had a lovely conversation for the first 12 minutes or so. But unfortunately, when I re-listened, there was just too much problems with the microphones, so I cannot use those first 12 minutes. But after 12 minutes, we decided to sit down on a bench in the forest, and that's when the interview got started. So you will hear some birds in the background, but I hope you're okay with that, because yeah, I think Pa has really interesting stories to share. So since the first 12 minutes had to be cut out, I will kind of go through a little bit of Paul's background, because normally when I do these interviews, I start with the background of the guest and then move forward to the now and then try to pick out like lessons from the story. So the first 12 minutes, Paul had already started her story. So Pa wanted to work in TV in the early 80s, and it was not so easy without connections in Sweden. The TV market is quite small at that time. It was only two channels, and you had to know someone to get those jobs. So she actually went to USA to learn the TV business, and she started behind the camera doing all kinds of jobs and eventually became a segment producer. And a little bit later, someone recommended her to become an actor instead, and she actually starred in a CBS TV show called Mountain Rangers. One thing, funny thing that she shared was, I asked her about if her English was okay being an American TV show, and she said it was fine until one day they were shooting a scene and it was really cold, and then it came out with a slight like Swedish accent, so they actually had to change the script a little bit. So she was after that a Swedish person living in, I think, I don't know exactly where Mountain Rangers were shot, but yeah, so they changed the character to being Swedish actually. But because of her jobs in US, she got scouted to do a new TV show in Sweden and flew home to do the audition. And this is where we kind of left off, where I turn off the mic, and this is where the interview starts, when she's back in Sweden to do an audition for this really big TV job in Sweden. So they asked her to do an audition in front of a live audience of 15,000 people, and that's where the episode starts. So here we go. Listen to Pa's story that is really, really amazing, and also lots of lessons. Oh, we had some technical problems, which happens when you go walking and talking.
Mic.
There was no helicopter, but you stepped on the mic. But yeah, so yeah, the audition, 15,000 people.
15,000 people.
And you were, yeah, how was it? What happened?
Well, what happened was, first of all, when I saw how many people that showed up, I went to the, you know, they have the bathrooms that they roll in, the temporary, and I tried to lock it and say that I couldn't get out, mm-hmm. so I wouldn't have to get out, okay? Well, that didn't work. They figured out a way to open it because I started getting really nervous at this point. And then when I go up on the stage and I stand in the background before I enter, this guy who he was in charge of the audience and I don't know what you call it in Swedish or in English, actually I forgot, but he was in charge. And what he does is he comes up to me and he says, he whispers in my ear and he says, I just want you to know one thing, Paul. You see the people sitting here at the very first row, the front? Those are all the people who are in charge of this TV station. There you have, and then he went through every single person. And they needed to be there to see me so they could decide if I was the right person. I would have wished for him to tell me that later, because if I was nervous to start with, can you imagine what it felt like after him saying this? But it worked out. I went up and I hardly remember what I said, but I know I used the material I had heard before.
Was it on purpose? Did he do it to test you, to see if you can handle the pressure?
I think so. Because, and I did.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing, yeah.
And that's why I got the job, because they noticed that I could handle other things happened that you couldn't expect or I, for one, had no idea could take place. And my job was just to deal with it.
Well. Do you remember did you get into a flow state?
On the stage?
Exactly. Because you said you didn't remember, and that's normally when you're in a flow state. But like going from nervous to going up on stage and leaving the nervousness state and getting into the flow state.
Did you know what it feels like.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think it was the first 3 seconds. It's different for every person, but the first minute or so, I was nervous. But when I started playing with the audience and I put my focus on, and you've talked about this before, when it comes to people who have stage fright, shift the focus from yourself, like Marie-Louise said,
yes,
who was
exactly.
a guest here.
You listened to a previous episode.
I sure do. Research. You put the focus on to them because they're the important ones, and then you can relax because now it's nothing about you. You're just a vehicle. And it took away, and I got great reactions from the audience, so they fed me. I remember I thought it was a lot of fun. And I did not look any of the people in the front row in the eyes. I completely focused on people behind or at the sides or people who were smiling.
So you must have done a good job, because you got the job.
I got the job right there.
Have you watched this after? Have you seen the show? Like, did they film it?
And not the audition.
No. Would it be interesting to watch it after?
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? I do know what I wore, but I don't know what I looked like. No.
Okay, so the job was, something happened. It was the first show when you did the live. Whole Sweden was watching, or how was it? You tell
the listeners this days, story. In those days, I heard figures of 3.6 million people watching. In those days, you only had 2 channels. There were no commercial stations. And whenever they build up, like they do a lot of PR before about the new show, they make it so huge, bigger than life. And also when they made me sound like I was going to be the new face of television, who were going to change what television looked like by my persona, which is a lot to put on a kid. I was a kid. So the result was not so good, but I had really nothing to do with it. It was a machine that broke. I wasn't even on camera. Someone else was. It wasn't his fault either. And what they did in Sweden that they would never have done in the States, they let it be seen.
They kept it
in
rolling.
Front of every, they kept everything rolling, and it was live. But you know what? I my first reaction was, we have a live band. Why don't you just tell the band, start playing some music, bring out one of the artists that was going to sing, change the schedule, get this fixed outside the view. But they even forgot to put to turn the mics off, so the people who
swear words?
Yes. You betcha. You bet. These are mistakes that if you're professional, you should never do.
Yeah, just cut to another mic. Or, yeah.
And also, you know, if you're new, you look at your producer and the people who are in charge of the show, and you try to look for some kind of guidance, and they look away because they didn't know. So they were dumbfounded, which to me... I mean, I worked enough in the States, and I'd never seen that. And there was no support system, and even when the show was over, I mean, and all the bad press came, and we had to continue on. We had X amount of shows left, and then they canceled us. But
so how many shows did you have to do after that?
I think they ended up just doing 14, and we were scheduled for 22, something like that.
And the media was quite... tough.
Fierce.
What were some of the
comments?
Headlines or comments?
Get her thrown off of television for all time.
Wow.
She's got ugly... her. Well, I mean, there's so much of it. I don't know. But there could be it could be things like her gross little voice or her fat knees.
Fat knees?
I was like 21. I didn't have any fat knees. And I felt like, can't you find anything better to complain at?
Yeah.
And let me tell you something.
I've learned... I need to look at your knees now.
You need to look at my knees.
They're very nice knees, but...
Well, thanks a lot. They're hurting, but... I was a dyslexic, okay? In those days, I didn't dare to tell anybody. Because dyslexia wasn't really out there. Yeah. People didn't understand it. So, and I've always managed to learn my scripts... by heart, so I've always worked around it. And here, there was a moment when they bring out, they have this man who's a guard. He has a briefcase. I think the briefcase was connected to his arm with
handcuffs
or something. I might have made that up, but yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I can see it in front of him.
Yeah. And he comes out with the questions we're supposed to ask the people who are competing. Which means, of course, I've never seen them. Okay? Once again, I'm a dyslexic.
So you're supposed to read them live?
Live, for the first time. Can you imagine the nervousness of that? I think they were afraid that we'd be accused of cheating. Well, we got accused of cheating anyway because of this ball that wasn't on camera when it fell down in its little hole. But that moment was really dreadful, because if you said something wrong, it could alter the result of the competition, if they won or lost, and it would make you sound stupid.
Wow. So you have had such an interesting life, and there's so many stories, so I think we go through it, and then we jump back and take out some lessons. So after... this TV show, you started TV4, right? It was a big moment, because I remember I was a kid, we only had two channels, and finally there was another channel that that started. And what was your involvement in TV4?
In the beginning, my job was to help out and find the new talent and test them, do quite rigorous tests, and I think it was like 1100 people that wrote in, and I think we tested 50 of them in front of the camera, and I think 25 went on to get education, and some of them became stars.
Yeah, I think some still today, right?
Absolutely.
Which, any names that you...
Malou von Sievers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Adam is not with us anymore.
Yeah.
He was one of them.
Adam Alsing, Swedish profile that
died in COVID.
Yeah, in COVID, unfortunately.
Many more.
Excellent.
And then I was on camera myself.
Doing?
Oh, God. I did everything from the weather to being a show host, to being the woman who is, I don't know what you call it, we call it halloa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trying to figure out if there's a word for it in English. When there's a personality who is on camera throughout the whole evening and presenting the different shows, the news, whatever.
Mm.
It's your guide on camera for the whole day, whole evening.
Yeah.
Did that. And then we did speaker jobs. You know, we turned up everywhere.
That was a big thing, of course, too. Finally, we had another channel. That it's a more entertainment for Sweden.
But that didn't go out too well either.
Yeah, what happened?
There was a lot of criticism because it was a commercial station in this country. And so the press basically were waiting to see if the premiere was going to be a success or somewhere in between.
Mm.
And they were ready with a failure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what was printed.
Mm. I watched the premiere, but I think I liked it from what I remember. Yeah.
How old were you?
So I'm born 78. So what was it, 91 or was it?
It was 90, I think. 1991,
yeah. So it was like 12. So I think it
was
the news.
You were easy to please.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. But it was the news, the first thing they showed, I think. From what I remember, but I'm not sure.
We had a lot of problems with the machines that would feed the different news segments.
Okay.
It would, you know.
Okay.
But it was an interesting time. There's a lot to learn from it.
Mm. Yeah, of course. You moved on to radio.
Yeah, I moved back to the States. I left TV4. I moved back to the States, kept working as an actress. And then in 95...
Mm. Ah, okay.
Yeah, I came back to Sweden.
Yeah.
And I was on a radio show, and I loved the feeling of not being seen but heard.
Ah, okay. Because you told me before we started recording that you interviewed a lot of big profile names.
Mm.
So can you share some of those guys that you interviewed back in the days?
Yes. Mel Gibson had just come out with Braveheart, the movie. I interviewed him. You usually get like 10 minutes that you're allowed to interview. But I had tricks. I did a lot of fun things to get a longer interview, more in depth. And I always ended up getting an hour.
Mm.
So it was him. I had Mel Brooks, Lionel Richie. There's a lot of them.
Mm. So what trick did you use on Mel Gibson?
I'd prefer to tell you the trick that I did. Mel is one thing, but the one I did on Mel Brooks is the one I like the best.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I took on a persona. And I decided with Mel Brooks because Mel Brooks were very hard to interview as well, what I was told.
Okay.
He takes over the interview and he's charming, but he's... And I also heard he likes women.
Mm.
You know? So I decided, okay, I'm going to be very American and dress like a very sensual American young woman. More makeup than I ever would. And what I did, the interview was in Grand Hotel, in a suite. And I went up there with a short dress, and underneath it, in the elevator, I put in a fart bag. And I decided that I was going to get him off. Not get him off, I'm sorry. Take that away. Get him a bit shocked.
So
he would lose his coolness.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in, and I pretended to be extremely nervous. And then when I sat down, and that big fart came off... He went bright red, okay, bright red. And all of a sudden, his body language was of trying to be a caretaker, you know, touching me and saying, don't worry, honey, don't worry. Everybody does that. It's natural. It's okay. So he went from this cool man with an agenda to this father figure, you know, who all of a sudden just was the sweetest man. And while he's sitting there explaining things, I know this is going to sound horrible. I put my hand underneath my skirt or dress, and I slowly pull out the flat, sweaty fart bag, and I dangle it in front of his face, and I say, "The joke is on you, Mr. Brooks." Well, we had the best conversation. He, all of a sudden, you know, he wanted to give me his number. He wanted me to be in his movie. And I know better than that. Yeah. So I just said, that's perfectly fine. Let's just leave it at this. Mm-hmm. But the conversation all of a sudden started be about women or love or mm-hmm. and his wife, Anne Bancroft, and life.
Yeah.
It was really deep, and he started telling things that have been hard for him in life.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing I would do.
Yeah. I need to bring a fart bag. I didn't bring any fart bag.
That's a big mistake here.
Was,
the fun thing was, I give it to him after that.
Really?
And he took it, and he was going to use it on Leslie Nielsen, you know, the guy from Nine and a Half.
Yeah.
The gun, the naked gun.
Yeah, yeah. I used to love those movies.
Yeah, because they made a movie, and they like to
interesting.
Play farts. So that's it.
Is that was that live on radio or no? It wasn't live.
No, it was.
But did
recorded.
You did you leave that part on with the fart bank?
Of course.
Yeah, that's good radio. Huh?
I hope I left the material with the radio station, and I don't know what they did with it. So I
that
don't
would
remember.
Be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, if they cut it out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now that I think about it, yeah. I don't know. If it would have been on television.
Mm.
Which is what I would have loved to have done.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that on TV?
Yeah, absolutely. That would
nothing cut.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just see the reaction.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a viral thing on
you bet.
TikTok, Instagram, everywhere.
Yes. So come on, give me the job.
So, the media landscape has changed quite a lot since you were working, started to work with this. Now it's social media, it's podcasts, there's so many different things. And first of all, these mean comments that you can see on social media. What lessons would you take from your life when you went through that hard time in the 80s when the press was writing bad things? What lessons can we take from that for some young woman that gets nasty comments on her Instagram account?
You know, to start with, the media is way worse today because of the social media and that people can hide behind it. For me, it was just the press.
Mm.
It's still in your face. But I learned to not read it.
Mm.
You will hear about it anyway, but at least I didn't have to dive into it and read every single thing. And because after a while, at least with me being so young and impressionable, I started believing what they thought of me. I was lucky enough that it was the press who didn't like me, but the wonderful comments I got from people, and I was shown so much love. I was sent presents. I had people, you know, support me every which way they could.
Even though you had fat knees?
Can you believe it? You know, it was actually a woman journalist who wrote that.
That's amazing. That's such a stupid comment.
It's such a stupid
comment. But that's a comment that someone would write on an Instagram feed today.
Yeah, because...
Or a YouTube, you know, like...
Yeah,
This, it's amazing what people write when they're hiding behind the screens, you know.
They can go to any extent. And some people get off on being mean.
Yeah, it seems like they want a reaction.
They want a reaction. Mm. And I think... A lot of times, you know, I don't think you feel too good if you do that, if you have that need. So it says a lot about maybe how their life is.
Yeah.
And I can feel some, I can feel with them, even though I disagree with what they do.
Yeah.
But I can understand that there's always a story behind that.
Mm. So basically, stop reading the comments.
Don't read the comments. Why read it? Yeah. Do the best
you
can.
You don't know these people anyway.
You don't know them. If it's not going to help you. Do get feedback because we need to be better at certain things. But choose the people you take the feedback from so that you know they know how to give feedback in the right way at the right time. Mm. But also that they don't have a hidden agenda.
Mm.
So take it from pros,
or
close friends,
someone that
family.
You care about,
or
that cares about you,
really.
Stage fright.
Mm,
so 15,000 people. That's okay. That time you didn't have maybe any strategies or tactics to deal with it. But any tips or advice to deal with stage fright?
Yeah, I didn't get them for years, and my stage fright, because that's what it does. It's a beast. It grows. So. If it started, you know, a little bit before, after a while, it would start a week prior to me doing something on camera. And I got to the point where it was like having stomach flu or something. Mm-hmm. You know, the body's telling you this is frightening. You have to stop. I'm going to get you to stop in any way I can. So I'm going to throw this at you. Okay, you're still standing. I'm going to give you this. So if you also understand what your body's doing, it's trying to help you because you've signaled there's danger. So your body's kind to you. What you need to do is train it. It's not dangerous. And you do that, first of all, by breathing is essential, because when you have your breath up in your upper chest instead of down here, you know, your stomach, your support, you don't get enough oxygen. It's easy to start feeling a little woozy, even get a blackout. So to have the breathing right and to change your focus. I know a lot of people in the acting, it's a well-known fact. There's a lot of actors who are famous who throw up before they go on stage, even though they've done it their whole lives. It doesn't always get easier. What you'll do is you learn to cope with it. And that's what I've learned. I've also learned, and let me know if you agree, when something goes wrong, whether it's a show you're watching, somebody cracks up while they're doing a line, it is gold to me, because it's being present in the moment. You get to see something that's not rehearsed. You get to see the actor maybe, you know, lose their face a bit. So for me, some of the best things that happened to me was when I lost it a bit, because I could regroup again.
And it, the audience tend to love this. Yeah,
they love it. Yeah. I love it.
They identify more. Or
I don't like perfection. I don't like perfection at all. I think it's perfect is imperfect.
So once you're on stage, you can continue to be nervous, or you can get into the flow state. Do you have any tricks to get into the flow state, or you know?
The flow state, once again, it's if you've got warming up. You've heard this before, but this is so important. An athlete would never compete if you haven't warmed up, or a singer would never go on stage, or a dancer. Okay. So to think that you can go out on stage and be a speaker or whatever without warming up is ludicrous. So you got to warm up, and in the warm up is the breathing is essential to, you know, land in your body, land in the right voice, get enough oxygen. I have lots of exercises where I tense up certain muscles and then I relax them. So my focus goes to the different muscles in my body where I feel tension, and if I can relax them, all of a sudden I'm thinking of something else. And I also get the body to not look so tense. And if you're tense in the body, you can hear it on the voice. You can sometimes see it in the face. You look stiff. I also learned I have high blood pressure. I have learned a breathing to lower my blood pressure. And it's, you know, you breathe in through your nose on four. You hold, and holding the breath is important for five, okay? Then you breathe out for seven. So the breath out is longer, and now you need to empty every drop of air. And when you're holding your breath, you create carbon dioxide, right? And it calms your system. So holding your breath and then releasing it. And doing this a couple of times until you feel the stress go out.
Is the Andrew Niels Wheels or something? Is that the guy behind that?
The breathing
pattern?
Don't know.
I think it's Andrew something. Yeah, some American.
Okay.
Yeah, this breathing is good way to get focused and relaxed.
Get focused and relaxed, and always remember.
Andrew Wheel, I think, yeah.
I have to look it up. If I have something to say, remember I said before, we are, I'm the vehicle to get it out. Okay, it's not about me. This is not a play where I have the lead role. I might think so. No, the audience is the lead role. So when I give the message is also the important thing, and I'm handing it to you. The way I hand it, I can work on so it's clear, better, more interesting, inspiring, or whatever you want to call it, or exciting. But it's not me. It's what I want to give you. Mm. And I know if I have something like you do, you have a lot of good stuff to say. You have meaningful tools, you know, tips. That's gold. That's what it's about. It's not about you. So when you shift your focus, then it's way easier. You can even imagine yourself giving this gift, if that helps you.
Yeah, that's a nice frame, actually. Mm. Talent. So as an entrepreneur or as a leader, you want to find good talent to work for you. Mm. And you recruited Adam Alsing. It was a big profile. Mm. Also Malou von Sievers. Mm. What did they do to stand out? Like, or how did you like recognize these people are good?
I was part of it, but I wasn't the final. I didn't make the final decision. I trained them, or I put them on camera. With Adam, it's very easy to say because
he's a charming guy, no? Well, from what I remember from him on radio.
Yeah, he was, but he was very nervous. Oh, really? So his test, and I gave him a lot of time because when I did my auditions, I remember you didn't get many chances, and we all have a right to be nervous. So I always gave more time, and I always tried to aid the person to relax, you know, and dare to be themselves. But Adam was still nervous, and it showed. So when we showed the tape to people in charge, they said no. Really? Okay. And Adam was smart. I love him for this. He gave me such a lesson. He wouldn't take no for an answer. So what he does is he makes his own little audition on tape. And he sends it to me personally. So he's on camera. He has the phone book. Remember we had those in the old days?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he says, this is the list of all the people who are so disappointed I'm not going to be on camera. And I would like you to hear some of the voices behind, you know, me. So I'm gonna just flip any page and give him a call. And the way he did this was with so much humor, so charming, so simple. Him in a telephone book and a phone. And I took that tape immediately, and I basically ran to the people in charge, and I said, "You gotta look at this guy again." Mm. And they did, and boom,
that's an amazing story.
Yeah, but if he hadn't, I'm sure he would have ended up on camera anyway, eventually. Mm. But he was smart enough to not give up. He knew that his nerves got in the way, and he can do so much better. And to do it in your own home, on your own terms, when you can relax and show yourself, be authentic. Mm. That was the difference.
Yeah.
And think about it: which people do you remember? Are the ones that put on a persona or a fake role, or they're just a role? No, it's the authentic people behind the role. If you disagree, please tell me.
No, this interesting story. I see him in front of me. So for the international listeners, Adam Alsing was a big media profile on radio, and was he on TV as well, I guess?
Oh yeah, TV, that's where he made his big break.
Yeah.
He was loved. He did every type of television show you can think of, and absolutely loved.
Yeah. Malou von Sievers. Mm-hmm. She was a news anchor for a long time, and then she had a talk show like Sweden's Oprah, or how would you
say? Sweden's Oprah, for sure. No, I don't remember her being a news anchor. She was a show host. No.
Oh, okay.
And she started in I think she was in charge of a fashion magazine called Elle.
Mm-hmm.
When she just had a child. I hope if Malou hears this, I'm recalling it right. But so she just went back to work, and it didn't work, so she decided to try this.
Okay.
And with her, it was nice to get people of all ages. And at that time, she was considered, actually, a little older.
Mm.
And it was so important to get every age in. Because what are the audience? They want to see someone like themselves up there.
Mm, yeah.
So if you skip that, and who's watching?
Yeah.
At what time in the day? Who's home?
Mm.
You know?
She
was very, very, very good, and now she just quit.
Recently. Mm. Yeah. So you mentioned a concept that you were... Before we recorded, you mentioned this what did you call it? Habit stance?
No, but that's another good one. You just created a new one. Habit stance. No. I'm going to have to think about that one. No, it's called happenstance.
Happenstance. So, for example, becoming an actor in Hollywood is like a dream for a lot of young girls in that age. Mm-hmm. And it happened to you.
It happened to me.
So how did you use happenstance?
Happenstance has been a big part of my life because happenstance is a mixture of two words, obviously. Happen, which is the event, and the circumstance, which is the surroundings to the event. And it's not luck or it's not destiny. It's opening yourself up to situations where you might meet somebody, or you might hear something, or you might decide to take that side of the road instead of that one. So it's being open. And you can have a prepared happenstance where you have an idea of what direction you want to go, but on the way, you're completely open, and you jump on an occasion that happens. You don't say no, you just, I'll try this one out and see what happens. My life is that. I grew up, I went to school in Sweden in a school called Österjön. And the way we grew up in my days were to have a clear goal. You had to know exactly what you're going to do as a grown-up, exactly how to get there. And I did see people who followed that. Once they were done with their education, they became lawyers or doctors. And they decided, no, this wasn't it. I don't like this job. I wanted to do something else. But now they spent all these years. And if they've been listening in and maybe acted upon an impulse or listened to their inner self before, they might have taken a different direction, a different route. So what they're doing, I think it's in the States, is that they're working with young people in school to integrate happenstance into their lives, as well planned happenstance. You don't sit there and wait for things to happen. You put them, you know, in your path. I don't know if that was clear enough.
Yeah, no, it kind of makes sense that you have a direction, but you also let circumstances like form you and maybe listen to your inner guidance system or something like this.
And meetings with people.
Yeah.
You know, you love people. I love people.
Yeah.
When you meet people without having an agenda or, I mean, like you, when you interview now, you take it from, you have an idea, but then you let it just fly.
Yeah, see what happens.
And I think in meetings with people, just to be open, and you don't know what that person is gonna, what part they're gonna play in your life. But they're always worth listening to, even though they don't agree with you. There might be a lesson in there. The people who, you know, the bad things that happened to me, I've used all of it.
Yeah, of course, there's so many lessons in those tough times.
That's what makes me a better media trainer. That's what makes me a better, you know, coach.
So I think for me lately, I've been trying to work more and more like with a happenstance. When I was younger, I was more like, okay, goals, like 5 years, what am I going to do? Write down this, then write down that. And now it's more I have a like direction, 20 years, I want to impact a lot of people, help them, you know, contribute, improve lives with strategies and tactics like this. And by interviewing smart people like you, with lots of experience. And just because you don't know what happens. There was a pandemic 2 years ago that changed everything. I was living in Dubai. I had a good life in Dubai, good business, and then suddenly everything shifts, you know. And then if your goals are written in stone, then you maybe get stuck to something. You know? So
that's true, and you get very disappointed, and you might become apathetic. No, what do you call it? Pathic. When you don't know what to do.
Apathetic, no?
Now, there is an important take on this that we cannot forget. I don't know how much you know about personality types.
Myers-Briggs.
Myers-Briggs and all that.
I know you're certified in Myers-Briggs.
Yes, I'm certified.
What are you?
What am I? What do you think I am?
I think you're an extrovert, I know.
Yes.
And I think you're a feeler.
I'm Absolutely.
Which I am as well. I am an extrovert and a feeler.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, I am ENFP. I don't know what you are, but maybe you are the same. And that's why I like you.
That's why it flows so well. So that is what I'm going to get to with the next point. Now, if you are a person like us, we're living a flexible life. It's a part of, we like to look into the future, you know?
Yeah.
For us, it's easy to go into happenstance, easier.
Yeah. If is that the perceiver judger? Is that the last one that is like this? Or is it all the combined?
It's the combined also.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm thinking about the one where if you are very much into details, it's everything about here and now. You don't see the big picture. Then it's hard to be a visionary. It's hard to... This is the stuff happening around here that I notice. I can't help but notice everything that goes on is around here.
Yeah, that's so interesting. The birds?
The birds, the sounds, the bees, the flower moving, somebody doing something.
Mountain bike.
Yeah, so focus, back to focus. For an introvert, that would be very easy.
But maybe for the listeners, give a quick overview on Myers-Briggs. Are you comfortable doing that?
Well, you know, it does, there's no such thing as a quick overview when it comes to Myers-Briggs. It's if you think about the colors, I would say the not as extensive, not as deep, but I think they kind of build on the same.
It's Carl Jung both.
Oh, Carl Jung both.
Yeah. There's a personality test that you can do, and for the listeners, I recommend 16personalities.com, which you can do for free.
Yes. It's really interesting. Also, remember, this is just a part of a person, okay? There are lots of ENFPs like you and I, but if you compare us, depending on what's been happening in our lives, our experiences, our upbringing, what culture we come from, that's going to differ. So even though we have certain personality traits that can be alike, we're still going to be different. And with all the different personality types, the 16 different kinds. If you're an extrovert and an introvert, you have both. We all do. But you're always more to one side. Some people are a little bit in the middle.
With extrovert introvert, I'm actually in the middle. And sometimes I'm like, I like people, but sometimes I need time for, like, if I spend too much time with people, I need a couple of days to be by myself,
basically. To recuperate.
So I used to go for these exhibitions, and the first day was like meeting like friends from all over the world. I was part of like a network, and we had so much fun partying, and I had so much fun. The second day I was so tired, so I was like hiding. I turned off my phone and I was in the room, and then the next day people were like, where were you yesterday? Like, I can only do it one day, you know?
Yeah. So and the question is, were you always like that, or does that happen now that you're older?
No, I think, I don't know actually. Yeah, maybe it's a sign of getting older. No, I don't know.
Well, actually, as we go to the middle of our life, we might change and become the opposite. So a lot of extroverts, people who take their energy from the outside world, become more introvert as we, you know, with age. You will hear people that would love to go out after work for an after drink. They can't wait to go home and read a book, or they start working in the garden. You know, they start loving that stuff. But also there are people called ambiverts, and what they are,
I think I'm an ambivert.
You could be an ambivert. It means you're very close to the center. So you're 1 foot on each side, always a little bit more to one side. It's good because you can understand people who from both sides, okay? You can feel for them. But it can also make you a little unclear to people.
Interesting.
Because one day you're like happen. This, one day you're like that.
Yeah, it could be actually,
And that goes for all of these different levels that we're talking about. If you talked about that I'm a, you obviously noticed that I'm an F, that I'm a feeling person. If you're, you know, thinking people are feelers too. And feelers can think, okay? But we have a tendency to be more interested in consensus, worrying about other people's feelings, not hurting somebody, making sure everybody gets to be a part. A thinker, my husband's a thinker, they will always start with, if they give feedback, for example, it's not about you, it's what you just did, and it's no big thing, you know, it's no big thing. And they're very precise and to the point, and they can sometimes hurt you. But then after a while, the feeling part gets in, and vice versa. So, you know.
Has it been any interesting conflicts between you?
Oh, it's amazing we're still married. You know, we've been married for, what is it, 23 years? 23 years. No, we're really the opposites.
And opposites has he, attract he's done, sometimes. Yeah, he's done the test.
Like, he's done the test.
And yeah, and have you used it in your relationship? Like, do you he's aware of, it's awareness, no, as well?
Yes, it's the wonderful thing about that test, whether you don't need to take it all to heart, but look at it, because it gives you a greater understanding of who you are. And maybe you thought some of your weaknesses was something bad. It might turn out your weakness is your strength. And if you understand that you're not the only one who feels this way, thinks this way. But it also gives you a great understanding for people who are opposite than you. And when we're talking about communication, if you want to reach to someone, you need to make sure your communication is on their terms. If you always do it the way you do it, you're not going to always be understood. So what is your goal here? Is it to reach that person? Then try to figure out. If I ask a question to somebody who's an introvert, I can't expect a true answer right away. I got to give them the chance to think. Or if you come up with an idea, come on, just anyway, anything, just say something, whatever, no right or wrong, just do it. You can't do that. With an extrovert, they might just throw out ideas because they know I can take them back.
It happened in my first job, actually. One of my earlier jobs, I was working in sales for a hotel, and the general manager was quite quick, extroverted, and then the hotel manager were also like quick, like extroverted, and sometimes they came and asked me for things like, oh, we want to do this promotion, like, what do you think? And I needed time to reflect on these things, and sometimes maybe in the feeling part as well, I needed to like kind of like feel how it feels for me, you know. So like I couldn't give an answer, and I was like, and then I came home, I went for a walk in the forest, and it's like, and then suddenly I got like amazing ideas, and I was like thinking about it, feeling it, and then like 3 days later I would come back to them.
And sometimes you don't have the luxury of that time.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I think for them, they never understood that. No. You know?
That's why we need to be more clear about our needs. Yeah. Aware and more clear of our needs, and to voice them.
Yeah, but that's why it's good to bring in these kind of trainings in companies. So you learn how to communicate in the best possible way. So.
And if you look at a company, you should never use it for recruitment. You're not allowed to do that. But if you look at I've trained management teams, and they think that they're so different, and then when you double check their personality types, it turns out they're very much alike, and you need diversity, and maybe you need to understand, you need to bring in somebody who's a little bit the opposite.
Because you tend to recruit people that you like, that are similar to you.
Like you, because it's easier. Communication is way easier. And maybe getting results but you need somebody who's... it depends on what kind of job it is, of course. Nothing is black and white. Nothing is right and wrong.
It's people. When you deal with people. So everyone is unique and an individual. So for the last couple of years, you've been working more with leadership development and communication, correct?
Communication, and media training, and coaching.
And storytelling.
Storytelling is fantastic.
So any advice for how to improve storytelling?
I think stories, and I think once again, referring to one of the wonderful people you had on your show before, Marie-Louise, I think it was, having stories that resonate in you, preferably you've lived them yourself. Stories where you know enough detail, where you can color them, where you can feel, because that's what you're doing, you're creating a feeling with a story. You're helping people see a picture in their mind. So I would say start collecting now, because we live in a society where storytelling is used everywhere. Companies are doing it, commercials. And I've started listing my stories so I can reuse them to as examples, good or bad examples. So collect your stories, and they don't need to be long. So they just need to be intense.
So if you think about that list that you have with stories, and if you would take out your favorite one and share that with the listeners, which one would you pick?
Say this is this is where I would have loved to have time to think. If you ask me my favorite one, I don't have a favorite one. Well, this is one I tell more because I'm interested in what you think is a good communicator. If you have a I wouldn't say an idol, but someone you think is a very good speaker, or and sometimes it's a famous person, sometimes it's your mother or your father or a friend or somebody at work or your kid. And I bring out the story because I want people at one point to start pinpointing what do you think are the ingredients that you like in other speakers, because usually that's what you have yourself. And my story is a true story. And this woman became my idol in that one moment. It was a horrible time in my life. I was so distraught. I was so unhappy. I had lost my self-confidence. I felt worthless, to tell you the truth. And I knew I had to go out and get work. It's not a good time to go out and get work when you feel worthless, you know? And I went for this meeting with this wonderful woman. It's a gray day. I come in this room and I sit down next to her. The room has no windows and it's pretty bad lighting. And I just feel like I wanna run away from there. But I sit down and I'm already decided she's not gonna give me the job, you know? She starts the interviewing. I'm not really listening. I'm answering the questions half-heartedly, kind of automatic. And at one point, she reaches over and she touches my hand. And she looks me deeply in the eye and she says, "I believe in you, Paul." And I reacted like in shock. "What did you say?" "I believe in you, Paul." And without realizing how wrong it is to say why, that was my immediate reaction. Why do you believe in me? And then she started telling me, and I'm not going to go into that, but a couple of things that made the difference for her, that made her trust me, want to work with me, and she could tell that I was a person who had a big heart and that I do things passionately. But the words that she said altered my life that day. And the way she said it, the way she touched me by grabbing onto me to get me, because she could see she didn't get through to me, but by touching me, she moved me, looking deeply into my eyes and keeping the eyes so I couldn't look away, and saying the words very slowly with big intent so I could really see she meant it, and repeating them so I could hear them again. And sometimes communication can be that easy. A few words. "I believe in you." Four words. And then by adding my name, it hit me even more. Paul. Can you see that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that that moment was a pivoting moment in my life. I got the job. It became one of the best jobs I've ever had. She became a very important person in my life. She still is. But she really taught me of the way you communicate with feelings, the way you move people with your eyes, your voice, your touch.
But interesting also that she could see these things with you, even though you were maybe in the best emotional state at the time.
She saw through. The same thing with me, you know, when I met Adam, when he was doing the audition, I saw that he had potential. And I really tried to get it out of him. I didn't manage. But thank God he did himself.
Yeah. He must be very thankful to you, huh?
I don't know. Never spoken he's, about it. doesn't matter.
He's in heaven.
No? Yeah, maybe he forgot, but no, it doesn't matter at all.
So, happenstance.
Happenstance, and that was a happenstance. Mm. I had decided not to go because I thought I'm not going to get the job and I feel crappy. Mm. But I forced myself. Mm. And normally in auditions, people aren't like her. Mm. They're quite cold.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And they judge you immediately.
Yeah.
She didn't. She gave me all the time in the world.
A little bit different than the audition you did for 15,000 people when he tried to...
No kidding. And all the auditions I've done in the States for all the different TV shows I've done. You know, horrific. Some of them were horrific. Mm. So this woman is... Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure she's done it to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, so part of happenstance, you said, was having a direction.
Mm-hmm.
So what
planned happenstance.
Yeah, planned happenstance. So what is your plan for the future? Where do you see the next 10, 20 years?
Oh my God, I hope I get to live that long. Well, if I look at the future as what's coming up, it's to build my brand, to start working more with the States, be international like you are.
Mm-hmm.
I already got it going. And it's to go back to happenstance more, be open for chance meetings, doing creative stuff that I haven't done for years, the acting, maybe television, maybe writing, maybe partying.
Wow.
Partying.
Your kids are getting older, so yeah. It's
no,
fine.
No,
it's
not partying. Podding.
Podding. Aha, uh-huh. You said partying.
Well, partying is a good thing too. Maybe I should do that more. Yeah. So podding, that's my plan. And also I really work with trying to get people to be as authentic as they possibly can and to understand that you are what's interesting to me, not so much your role.
Mm.
And what makes you great at what you do is because of who you are. And I trust people more when I get a chance to see a little bit of the person behind, instead of just the facade, just the image, just the successes.
Mm.
Tell me your failures.
Mm.
And if you say you don't have any, I don't believe you.
Yeah. That's a long list, and there's a lot of lessons in all the failures. For
their gifts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think one of the speakers he says that when God gives you gifts, he wraps it up in a problem.
Oh, I like that one. That's good.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna steal it.
So, if you had a magic wand and you could teach something to everyone on the planet, what would you teach them?
I would want to teach them to get to know themselves better and therefore open up and try to get to know other people better. Because once you, that's when you connect. We're not islands. And if you start to understand, I think you have to start with yourself. I mean, this sounds like such a cliche, but if you don't have yourself figured out, and it takes a lifetime, you know, it's not easy. And some of us have a hard time looking into ourselves and maybe don't want to see everything. But also know you're never alone. There's so many of us with the same kind of feelings, thoughts, worries, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's part of life, to always be growing and becoming a better version of you.
Better version of you. And I think if you understand and are interested in other people, then there's a lot of this that's growing right now when we're being segregated, when there's tension. I'm just thinking, I wanted to move back to the States before, but I tell you, I do not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Mm.
There's a lot of...
Mm. But you want to work more?
Absolutely. Yes, to help.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Coach, help.
Yeah, yeah.
Help people to communicate.
Yeah.
Instead
that's
of the
opposite. Definitely needed. Yeah.
It's needed more than ever.
I think it's so divided now. So
I feel hope.
Yeah.
You know, I got to tell you one last thing. When I was during COVID, I had friends all over the world who were singles. And if one girl in New York, one girl in LA, one in Germany, everywhere, where they were more severe when it came to the clothes down. And they were very lonely, and they started, I could tell them starting to break down. So I went on this wonderful app called Marco Polo. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay. Marco Polo is free. I mean, you can upgrade if you want to, and I'm not selling this to anybody, but why I'm telling you this is because I could record things as long, short or long, and they could look at it anytime they wanted, and it doesn't go away. They can go back and relook, and then they can record. They can even see it while it's happening, but if you know, with the time difference, and they can answer when they feel ready, when they've thought about it, felt about it. And I would take them to parties, I would take them to dinners, I would take them out in Stockholm. So they got to be part of the life we got to lead.
Okay, nice.
That they didn't.
Yeah.
And all of them had come back and said this saved them, because they felt, they got so depressed. And I know one said, what the hell is the purpose? And when is this ever going to end?
Yeah. It was tough times for those countries that locked down, and in Sweden we were partying, people were partying like normal almost.
So I brought them with me every single day. I didn't let go of them one day
and
for
that's,
2 years.
That's a perfect example of using technology for good. Because you can use technology in the back. You can write nasty comments on someone's Instagram account, or you can use technology to make life better for someone.
And connect, because I connected some of my friends who didn't know each other. So they could start Marco Poloing together.
Nice.
So now they're friends.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
So if people want to find out more about you and want to learn more about how they can work with you, where would you send them?
I've called my project On a Mission. So you can find me at, I'm going to give you the address later on. I just got to double check what I finally came up with, but I can be found at my On a Mission address.
Okay.
So anytime you want to get a hold of me, you can reach me there.
Okay. We put the link in the show notes.
Yes, we can do that. See how unprepared I am?
No worries, no. So yeah, we ended up sitting on a bench instead of walking. It's beautiful day in Stockholm. The birds are singing, and thank you so much for taking the time. But you had a very colorful life, and I think we spent 1 hour. I'm sure we could spend several more hours with stories from all your...
Well, we're two alike.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yes. I found a new friend, I feel like. But no, it was an honor, and I'm really glad that you wanted to have me here.
So that was Pa Newmuller Åkerman sharing some interesting lessons from her life, from Hollywood, from acting, from becoming a star on Swedish TV to working behind the scenes on TV4 and radio and all these things. Amazing life story and amazing lessons from her life. Now she works as a leadership consultant, leadership coach and a communications coach. And both Pa and I will speak at the yearly event in Stockholm called Kompetensveckan. So if you're in Stockholm, you have the chance to come and see us live. I'll be talking about cross-culture communication and also how to future-proof yourself. So you can find more information on that by clicking on the link in the show notes to this episode that goes to Kompetensveckan. This is a week with seminars and workshops with a lot of interesting speakers. So click on the link to that and to learn more about this. As always, you can learn more about Strategic Tech Coaching by going to the YouTube channel. Just search for Strategic Tech Coaching, and also follow us on Instagram, Strategic Tech Coaching. Please leave a nice review on whatever player you are using. And I hope to see you somewhere in the world. And I made some boo-boos, of course, in the episode. So I cut it out, but I left it for you, entertainment. So here's a blooper from this episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Talking a lot about that.
See, you got to warm up your mouth.
Exactly. No, you before we recorded, you mentioned this. What did you call it? Habit stance?
No, but that's another good one. You just created a new one. Habit stance. I'm going to have to think about that one. No, it's called happenstance.
Thank you for listening to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast with your host, Oscar Andermo. We'll catch you next time.